had?
No.
No. So this is not a dream narrative.
No, I wish it were a dream, but it actually was more related to real life. Yeah.
Well, it was great having you on Between the Covers today,
Keith. Thanks. Appreciate it.
We are talking today to Keith Lee Morris about his latest novel, Traveler's Rest. You've been listening to Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host.
The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill two vacancies on the board of directors. The board will elect the new directors at the February board meeting. Are you interested in nonprofit governance and in helping to shape the future of your community radio station? Do you have 10 to 15 hours per month to support KBOO? Then this may be just the right opportunity for you. The application and instructions are posted on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and paper copies are available at the station. In order to be eligible to fill one of these two vacant seats on the KBOO Board of Directors, you must be a KBOO member and you must submit a complete application by either emailing the document at kboocommunity@gmail.com or by mailing or dropping off the completed documents to the station to the attention of Timothy Welp, KBOO Community Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please send in your application by 5 p.m. February 15, 2016. If you have any questions, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com. Thank you for your support of Community Radio.
Ten years ago, a plot was hatched, where evil was with cunning matched. Whoever left their doors unlatched would find their infant children snatched by mock trolls. Ooh, no, the hawks rose. Trapshaw Senior loved his kid the same as regular fathers did. If you don't want to share his plight, make sure that you are locked up tight from Box Trolls. For this night, babies.
That's the Box Trolls song, written by Monty Python's own Eric Idle and sung by Ben Kingsley, I believe. Hello, and welcome to Words and Pictures, the comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we're going to be talking today about the most recent stop-motion animated feature from Laika Entertainment. It's called The Box Trolls, and I'm joined right now, live in the studio, by the co-directors, Anthony Stocky and Graham Annable. Tony, welcome to Words and Pictures, and Graham, welcome back.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Now, The Box Trolls. This movie is based on this series, this oddball fantasy series by Alan Snow. It's the first in a series of the Ratbridge Chronicles, which are absolutely jam-packed with characters and misadventures. So the two of you, for you, streamlining all of this pandemonium into a 90-minute movie that kids would sit still for, and parents as well, this must have been a challenge.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, looking back on the project, that was probably the biggest challenge of the whole thing, was agreeing upon what, you know, the film needed to be and dealing with the fact that, yeah, Alan's book, I mean, a huge part of its charm is just every page you turn introduces a new character, a new set, a new location, a new idea. And pretty early on, we all recognized that we weren't going to be able to afford to make a film on that level or quite the way the book was. So we really needed to kind of focus in on the things that meant something to us out of his crazy, chaotic story.
Well, on that thread, so animation can tackle some very adult themes if you call up some movies from Eastern Europe and Japan, even France, Joanne Sfar's work, for example. Now, here in the States, though, animation tends to get pigeonholed into family entertainment. And tell us how you dealt with this stereotype and some of the ways you get in there and you subvert expectations, because you were really working hard at adapting Alan Snow's work.
Well, you know, it kind of started when Travis chose the book. When I first came to visit, he gave me the book to read. And part of the reason why I think he chose it was because of some of the themes.
And now we're talking Travis Knight, CEO of Laika Entertainment.
Yeah, so I think he chose the book because it had a mixture of this sort of Python-esque humor that he loved. And, you know, the potential for design and everything else was great. But also at the core of it, it had a really simple human story, the little boy's story. And it had themes that a lot of other studios or a lot of other animated films wouldn't go anywhere near. You know, this idea that the villain uses a certain segment of society to, it demonizes them so that he can attain power. I mean, I think the fact that that was a core part of the story is what, you know, attracted Travis to it. And I think, you know, the fact that, that Laika has sort of made their niche in the world of family entertainment by being willing to approach emotional stories that no other studio would really go near. Sometimes they touch on darker themes too, but not always. You know, they're just have an emotional story at their core.
Well, there's not I wouldn't say there's saccharine moments in the Box Trolls. There's just a lot of wackiness and ribald humor. We heard Eric Idle's song, speaking of Monty Python, and that was done. The character that Ben Kingsley plays is in drag at the moment when that song is being played.
Yeah, Madame Frufru. There's a long tradition in English humor of men wearing dresses. And I think what attracted Eric Idle to it was that, the fact that it was such a humorous sequence of Snatcher using the character of Madame Frufru, who's supposed to be an aristocrat from the continent who knows all of high culture. She's using them to seduce the people of Cheesebridge, the town, into believing what she says about box trolls is true. He liked that idea, but also I think he liked, similar to why Laika did the movie, he liked the idea of approaching these darker themes of a politician using a particularly a lower class people as a target for his political rise.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned Ben Kingsley and Eric Idle. We'll get back to that in a minute. But Graham, I wanted to mention that the last time we had you on the show, you were, at the time, a story artist for Laika. Actually, you were heading up the team that drew the storyboards for the previous film, Paranorman, sort of the concept in some concept art in some sense. You're also drawing comics on the side. So tell us what happened next. How did you impress the brain trust of Laika? And Tony, how did you hook up with Graham to make the movie happen?
Well, way back, I mean, I was listed as the head of story on the project, and it was still pretty early days for the Box Trolls. And it was just, I don't know, it was those little guys in boxes, the way that Alan Snow had drawn them. I got really excited. For me at the time, I remember thinking like, wow, this is my chance to make a Gremlins movie. For me, that's what I went into this project thinking. It was like the Gremlins. And for me, that was like a huge opportunity, just something really exciting to work with. And I guess sensibility-wise, naturally created some sequences that really kind of landed for Tony and for Travis, because again, it was such a hard job figuring out how to turn Alan's book into a film. And for just luck of the things I guess that appealed to me happened to appeal to Tony and Travis, and our sensibilities just really lined up, and it became obvious pretty early on that I guess Travis felt I'd be a good fit with Tony on the film. And I'm very happy for it.
Yeah, at the time that we started, there hadn't yet been any Minions movies, and we really were intrigued at the idea of having characters that were so important to the stories that didn't speak English. Mm-hmm. They did make grunts and noises that you could understand. In the book, you can actually understand them when they talk, but we definitely wanted to keep them to be totally almost pantomime characters, which is a great opportunity for animators and for animation, is to have wholly pantomime characters. And Graham's comics just can do so much with just the subtle look in the eye or a tiny little gesture. We did, you know, at the same time, we didn't want to turn them into little mimes and stuff, so we wanted to keep them kind of strangely other, not totally human, not quite animals and stuff. So that just all seemed to come together with two sequences that Graham had done, one in particular, which was a little bit of an origin story of how the Box Trolls end up with this baby. And it became our favorite sequence. It was a sequence we always pointed to as, this is the core of the movie, this is the tone. And it was subsequently the first sequence that was cut halfway through production.
Yeah, true. It's funny how that works, but yeah, we kind of...
Well, you said Gremlins, and they seem to have a language all their own, the Box Trolls do, and it is kind of Gremlin-esque. And you mentioned Monty Python as an influence, but I'm also thinking Willy Wonka. There's that Roald Dahl-esque kind of dark fable sensibility that comes through there.
Yeah, Roald Dahl seems to loom over a lot of
it's
stop motion.
It's funny because you know, I don't recall early on. I mean, maybe you had it in your head, but we never really discussed Roald Dahl as like a big influence or anything. But as, yeah, as this film sort of began to solidify and materialize, it became very apparent that we were falling into that category, which I'm very happy to be grouped into that.
The sets remind me. So in Willy Wonka, I remember there was, I think it was shot in Munich, but it looked like it could have been any mm-hmm. European country, this industrial
right.
landscape,
yeah.
bleak Dickensian landscape. Yeah. And
Oliver Twist.
And the Box Trolls really has that yeah. sort of that architecture going on.
Yeah, Michel Breton is a French-Canadian designer who worked very early on when we were still devising the story. In his style, he'd worked on films like Triplets of Belleville and stuff. He is able to do, we called it, make a Miyazaki Europe. If you watch a lot of Hayao Miyazaki's films that are set in a sort of European, they're not Switzerland, they're not quite France, there might be Italy or the French Riviera. He has a way of just taking a lot of what we look at as Europeanness and cramming it all together in one city. Michel was able to do that. Yeah. He looked at the reference from, you know, Bruges and Paris. We looked at David Lean's Oliver Twist. We looked at German Expressionism. We had a lot of different references up there that all wanted to come together to sort of show you that the above ground world of Cheesebridge is a corrupt society and is a little bit of stuck in its old ways and a lot of old traditions and stuff. So we discussed a lot of that stuff, which just seemed to fit in perfectly with mm-hmm. Michel's own personal style.
Yeah, Sylvain Chomet, who did the Triplets of Belleville, I encourage anybody to check out that beautiful, the different cities that are on either side of the ocean in that story are great. Mm-hmm. And I actually just saw Kiki's Delivery Service, the Hayao Miyazaki movie, on yes. the IMAX screen at OMSI, which was almost vertigo-inducing because of his aerial
flying,
scenes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Graham, when you last appeared on our show, you were a fairly new dad. That was 6 years ago. We talked about your cartoon collections, Hickey and the Book of Grickle, all yep. the weird, unsettling, sometimes Hitchcockian threads that ran through them. Tony just mentioned the expressions that your characters, the sort of side eyes that your characters will do. So you both have school-age boys now, and mm-hmm. how has fatherhood changed your sensibilities? I mean, have you guys, you find yourself sometimes immersed in the world of rainbow unicorns and kids material? You sometimes have to rebel against that?
Yeah, I don't know if I rebel against it, but I will admit being a lot more aware and sensitive to things that are scary. Uh-huh. You as you get older, you kind of forget about a lot of, you may think you're tapped into it, but you really aren't tapped into it the same way you are as a kid in terms of things that frighten you. And when you're watching a film, you can sort of feel the tension and temperature rise. I can feel it through their eyes a lot more than
well,
I
if
would
you tell have. Kid if you ask a kid to tell you a story, it'll sometimes get really morbid.
Oh yeah, 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 they go there. I mean, they go wherever their imagination is going to take them, and they don't have any sense of sort of filtering or being tactful about how they present an idea. I mean, they just say the idea, which can catch everybody off guard a lot of times.
A lot of animation people have a keen, you know, awareness, a memory of a bunch of stuff that, you know, when you were little, you enjoyed being frightened. You enjoyed those movies that scared you. You enjoyed the fact that you survived them and you continued afterwards. But there's also a line that you don't want to cross. But, I mean, my son, all of our kids have grown up with the Box Trolls. Mm-hmm. These movies take a long time to make. So my son, he would look at the story reels when we would work on them and stuff. And sometimes he was the best person to go to for notes.
Well, I remember his notes around the studio. He'd leave those little post-its.
Yeah, he'd leave little post-its on the drawings he didn't like. But he would look at the story reel early on, and when he met the Winnie character, who at first doesn't like eggs and gives him a hard time, his question was, how long is it going to be before they're friends? And he already knew, and I was like, is it that obvious that they're going to end up being allies? And he knew from the very beginning, he'd seen enough movies even at that age to do it. So that's always a good barometer to use. If it's that transparent, maybe you're not doing something right. But it was also, he was a great barometer for, there's sequences in the movie where Snatcher's allergy to cheese makes his face puff up mm-hmm. and stuff. And so we wanted that to have the Roald Dahl-esque mm-hmm. power that it has.
The grotesque.
Yes. Yeah. You're in the presence of the grotesque. He's a grotesque man who's obsessed with something that's completely warped his personality. And that has, you know, as in all fairy tales, you know, a warped goal makes for a warped looking character and stuff. So we would do those things, but we never want to horrify, terrify kids or have them leave the theater screaming and stuff. But we also, you know, it's very true to Travis's vision and is that we don't want to, you don't do kids a service by protecting them from scary moments and deeper, more grotesque and frightening issues. I think that kids learn to control their own grotesque impulses by seeing fairy tales about characters who don't and stuff.
Well, you mentioned Winnie, the young protagonist of the film, played by Elle Fanning. You had a real all-star cast. Jared Harris, people remember from Mad Men, and Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, Lorraine Newman, Tracy Morgan. But you landed Ben Kingsley. And so let's see. This was pretty much you, Tony. You were, while Graham was staying here with Travis in Portland, you were traveling to England and getting a lot of the voice artists into the studio. Mm. So what was it like to be yelling through the glass of the recording booth telling Gandhi how to do his lines?
Yeah, you don't yell.
Not a lot of yelling.
You don't yell at Sir Ben through the glass. He comes completely prepared, and he's totally professional.
You were saying when you were working on this character, wouldn't it be great if Ben Kingsley?
Oh, I know. He was always an ideal. We said, wouldn't it be? Ha ha ha! We'd laugh. Okay, who are we really going to get? Because we test every voice we might use by say pulling the actor's performance in previous movies and then cutting them in edit. With a drawing of the character's face or even with the face animating a little bit, just to feel like, does that feel like the character? And also cut that character against Richard Ayoade or Nick Frost. How do these three feel? How does this little jazz trio feel talking to each other? Can you tell who's who? Does it feel like it comes out of their body? So Sir Ben's character from the Polanski Oliver Twist, and also from the movie Sexy Beast, we cut some of that dialogue together and we loved it. But I never thought that he would do it. He hadn't done animation before in the past, and I'm sure he had been asked. But Travis insisted that we at least try. So when we approached him, we were really pleased. He read the script and called us. When I actually got to the little town where he's from, Chipping Norton, in London, it's this picturesque little town that looks like it was designed by Disney World. He records in a tiny little studio in a little booth that's about as big as a closet. And he came into the recording session and he told us that he would only do this character reclining in a chair. He needed a chair to recline because he felt that the character had eaten gluttonously and that his voice would come from his huge belly, and he could only make that voice if he could be reclining at the time. And I didn't think the chair would fit into the tiny little recording booth, but they figured out a way to do it. And then when he first started, he said, I'd like to take three passes at the dialogue in this scene before we talk about it. And then when he did it, such a strange voice came out of him. It took me a long time to get used to it. It was such a bigger take than I imagined. And that weird idiosyncrasy he came up with where he would elongate odd vowels in the middle of words and stuff, that was so surprising. I kind of thought I loved it, but in my head I was thinking, is this too strange? So that whole first four-hour recording session where we flew all the way to England, while I was flying back, me and the producer were going, we're either going to be geniuses or fired when we play this for Travis and the animators.
Yeah, when you listen to Ben Kingsley as Snatcher, he's unrecognizable as the characters you've seen before. You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, SW Counselor, and we're talking with Graham Annable and Anthony Stocky. They are the co-directors of the most recent stop-motion feature from Leica Entertainment, The Box Trolls. So another amazing personage that you got to meet was Eric Idle. And tell us about hanging out with Eric Idle in his L.A. household. It was that was quite an experience.
You know, Ben Kingsley, by the time I actually flew to England to record him, had already agreed to do the project and stuff. So there was a certain kind of pressure off there. You just wanted to you know, make a good first recording session, so he felt comfortable with the whole process.
Well,
but when we flew down to meet Eric Idle, he hadn't yet agreed to do it, and we had to pitch him the story.
Well, and that was another situation where, after we got Kingsley on board, I think we got a little bold, a little cocky, and we're like, well, this, we always said this was going to be like a Python-esque song. Why don't we get one of the Pythons? And we just figured, let's give it a shot. We, you know, roll the dice again, and we approached Eric Idle. And it turned out, was Eric Idle's daughter into stop motion? There was some connection to stop motion that none of us had been aware of.
Yeah.
And And so coupled with that connection and his enthusiasm for what he liked, what he saw in the script and what we were asking or hoping he could do for us, it all just kind of came together again. And again, we were kind of pinching ourselves that, yeah, you ended up walking around his house,
checking out the paintings. Props. But he was another one where you showed up and I sort of pitched the story and he was nodding through it. And I could kind of tell, oh, he really did read the script. Because he started talking about Madame Frufru. And usually, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been in there. Okay, this person hasn't read the script or they've only read their part. And, you know, those old cliches are kind of true. But no, he had read the whole script. He knew the importance of the sequence. And honestly, he pitched and he wanted to hear my take on things. But he had decided that he was interested in the song, I think, before we got there. And he already had quite a few ideas. And, you know, as we spoke of before, he loved the situation of a big theatrical carnival in the middle of town square with a man in a dress singing and nobody knowing that it's Snatcher, the guy they vilify all the time and thinking it's an aristocrat from the continent. And then he also liked the darker themes, the political themes underlying that. I mean, you forget there's always thorns in the Python sense of humor. You know, they're not just Absolutely. Silly. They're not just wacky. There's critiques in there of political stuff and historical stuff and point of view, and that I think almost more than anything else is what interested him in the whole idea.
Very evergreen themes, though.
Yeah.
The film is The Box Trolls. It's the third stop motion feature from Leica Entertainment. The directors are Anthony Stocky and Graham Annable. Tony and Graham, we've run out of time, but if you can stick around and chat for a few more minutes, we'd love to hear more about your work.
Sure.
Great.
Fabulous. Okay, we're going to get extra nerdy about the animation process, about stop motion, and then we'll put all that additional audio up on the KBOO website for our listeners to access. The archive page can be found at kboo.fm/wordsandpicture. And thanks to all our words and pictures, excuse me, and thanks to our listeners on the radio dial and at kboo.fm. I'm your host, SW Concer. Hey, be sure to follow us on Twitter at wordsandpicture. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.